Okay, welcome back to Coast. This hour, we'll take your phone calls as we talk about the paranormal world. Kelly Lee and Michael Broski with us, and we'll get right into it with your calls next on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back, Kelly Lee, Michael Broski with us. Kelly, you were talking about bringing the clergy in when you stumble across things that are demonic. What did they do once they get there?
Well, thankfully, we really haven't had to do that. However, they would come in, they would do further investigations. They need to determine that, you know, that there is no mental illnesses, drug dependencies, that sort of thing. And then once they do determine that, then they would need to decide, you know, what the next step would be. There's various things from, you know, blessings on all the way up to exorcisms.
Michael, do you two talk to these spirits at all?
I believe we do. I believe we have conversations with them, and you know, they want to talk to us. We were in a cemetery, and we came across a soldier's grave, and we asked him where he served, and he said Korea. I think they want to tell their stories.
I would guess that some of this is sad, isn't it?
Extremely. Recently, we've come to realize that a lot of these entities don't even know they're dead. We were on the North Carolina, and we were speaking with a sailor, and I don't know what came over me, but I said, "Do you know you're dead?"
Oh, my God.
And it said, the voice said, "Alive."
Wow.
And that was probably one of the saddest moments we've had.
Wow. And, you know, even though time doesn't mean much on the other side, it could be going on for years with our time, right?
Exactly. I think the time difference, you know, I think it's a completely different frame of reference for them than it is for us. Completely different.
Let's take some calls here for you. This hour is going to fly by. Let's pick it up by going to Jeff in Iowa. Welcome to the program, Jeff. Go ahead.
Hi, I have a question for your guest. You made reference to heaven, and I just would like to know, do you also believe in, or what's your thoughts about hell?
Kelly, Michael, which one wants that?
Go ahead, Michael.
You know, I look at the Bible and I read over it, and it refers to a judgment day. You know, so in my mind, you know, we don't know what God's time frame is, but, you know, it talks about one day, one moment. I do believe there is a hell, I think once that judgment day occurs, I think, you know, then you're either in heaven or hell. But until that time, even the Bible refers to, you know, some of the Old Testament as being asleep.
How about you, Kelly? You want to take it?
I agree. I believe a lot of these spirits are asleep, you know, and sometimes we just happen to kind of catch them awake, or we accidentally wake them up. I do believe there's definitely a heaven and a hell, and, you know, that's where the demons come from, is hell.
Well, what do you think happens, Kelly, when a real evil person, human being, dies? What happens to them?
Well, you know, it's like I tell a lot of our clients, you know, you can have, there's good people in life and bad people, and when they die, they're going to be the same. So, you know, every bad spirit you run into, it might be a human spirit that's just really evil, really bad, or just cranky or whatever, and not necessarily a demon. Everybody thinks just because there's something maybe not nice going on in their home, oh, I have a demon. Well, you know, demons are very, very far and few between. They're very rare to come against.
Jesse is in Dover, New Hampshire. Welcome to the program. Hi, Jesse. Go ahead.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. Good to have you with us.
I just want to say, I grew up in Dover, New Hampshire. And this town was founded in 1623. It's one of the oldest. It's one of the oldest towns in the United States.
I bet you've seen everything there. Wow.
Well, I was surrounded by a cemetery when I grew up. My house that I grew up in, we were surrounded by a cemetery, and that cemetery is very dear to me. And I walk through it whenever I go visit my parents. I'll go to my parents' house. I'll walk through it at 11 o'clock, 11:30, 12 o'clock at night. And when I walk through that cemetery late at night, I feel peaceful, and I feel protected. I feel like I've known these people my entire life, and they've been long dead. They died in the 1800s. But it's a peaceful place. It's not a place of, it's not dark. It's It's humble. And my grandparents are there, and it's something that I don't think people realize, the history. But I find it peaceful.
All right. Thanks for that feedback. Peaceful, Kelly. That's an interesting phrase to use about something that could be ghostly, isn't it?
Not really. The whole time he was talking, I was shaking my head. You know, so many of the cemeteries we go to, probably 99% of the cemeteries we go to, we feel exactly the same way.
And Michael, when you two go out and you look for the site, do you sense anything now physically? Can you feel something?
You know, originally when we got involved in this, I would say no. I was pretty skeptical with that. But, you know, as time goes on, you know, I kind of like to use the shark tooth analogy. We live at the beach, and for years with our daughter, we used to look for shark's teeth. We could never find them, and then we found the very first one. It seems like after that, we started to find more and more. I think it's the same way with the paranormal. Once you kind of train your senses to be alert to it and you know what you're looking for, you know, I think you do become a little bit more aware of the paranormal.
Okay, we have Jeff in... No, we have John in Westminster, Colorado. I'll be there tomorrow, close by. Hey, John, go ahead.
Hi. You guys are doing a great show. I'm really enjoying it.
Thank you, sir.
Kelly and Michael, have you guys considered different ways of providing opportunities for those who passed on to communicate with you, ways that I haven't heard anybody mention here for a while?
Like what?
There was a fellow on Coast to Coast about 4 or 5 years ago. He had a set of three-dimensional glasses that are used for purposes of viewing 3D games on a computer. And he found that if these glasses, which alternate between opaque and clear at a cycle of 111 cycles per second, he said that he was capable of seeing, in some cases, entities that we weren't normally able to perceive with our series of senses that we have. That would be one way. Another way would be like maybe providing a white noise in the VHF or UHF frequencies, our old TVs. And then record that and analyze it later, looking for recognizable patterns. You know, we have a physical body, and we probably have an astral body, which is a chassis for that, and inside of that is our spiritual body. Those die in sequence. And for those who are trapped and can't cross fully over, it's probably very difficult for them to physically manifest on a physical plane. So by providing some sort of additional opportunity for them to manifest, maybe you could use something like film, like Ted Serios, this individual who used to image onto film with his mind. Maybe if you provided blank film or a light coating of talcum powder in the environment where the dearly departed are in. I'm just wondering if there are other ways that we could provide for them to communicate with us, because it's so hard for them to manifest.
You know, my wife gets a little irritated with me. I want all the toys. You know, and any suggestion anyone gives us, I just want to go out there and try it right off the bat. So I really appreciate you mentioning stuff like that. You know, I think there are so many ways out there for us to communicate. And who knows, there probably are some very unconventional ways. And I just want to try them all. And she gets a little irritated because I want to go out and buy all the equipment and test it out.
But we do try everything that we can think of. We try setting out trigger objects to see if they can manipulate them. We do try several different devices for them to speak, apps on our cell phones, you know, hack shacks, ghost radios, all kinds of devices that we do use. And we're always investigating new and interesting devices that we can use because we want to make it as easy for them, obviously, as we can.
So, Michael, how expensive is all this when you put the package together?
It can get a little pricey, but my wife's a good shopper of the house. She really knows how to price stuff out. And we're not your average household. A lot of people buy boats and go to Hawaiian vacations. We save up for paranormal equipment.
Plus, it's important not to jump at every new and faddish gadget on the market. I do a lot of research. I mean, he kind of gets angry with me because I'll research something for months before I'll actually buy it. I want to make sure that what we're getting for the money is actually going to do something and it's not just going to light up and make sound.
What is the most expensive piece of equipment, Kelly, that you two have?
that would definitely be our high definition professional night shot camera that we have. It shoots in full HD, and it has IR capabilities, and that was well over $4,000.
Wow. It adds up, doesn't it?
It does, but it's what we, it's our passion, so it's you know, it's what we do.
Okay, let's go to Guy in Los Angeles. Guy, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Hi, George. How you doing?
Good.
With a heavy heart that I say that another World War II veteran has died today. My father died today.
I'm so sorry to hear that.
My
condolences.
And we're all pretty shook up because he looks so good. You know, he's been in assisted health care, and they were taking good care of him out in Calabasas. And my sister's bent over backwards to make life for him in his new habitat comfortable. But my question is, how long does a person that's recently departed, how long do they stick around to where possibly we might have a telltale sign of them, you know, saying everything is okay and to let them go?
Now, that's an interesting question because Kelly and Michael, I have had, talking to so many people on this program, a number of different possibilities that either they can sometimes communicate relatively soon, much later, or not at all.
I agree, and it's so deeply personal. I think a lot of times, you know, it's not just the strength of the relationship, but it's whatever that particular person that's passed from us has on their mind. I mean, if that person feels like they got a chance to say goodbye and everything is good, they might go ahead and pass on right there. You know, it was probably 2 weeks after my grandfather, who was basically a father for me, it was probably 2 weeks after he died that he came to me in a dream, which I believe is just as paranormal as having a ghost come up and shake your hand. On the same instance, my husband's mother died 25 years ago, and I know she's come to me at least once, if not twice.
My father passed away. It's coming up on 5 years, and we have had really no communication. Now, we've not gone to any seance or anything where we wanted to summon him up.
Right.
I was at a seance several months ago with my producer, Tom Danheiser, and the person conducting the seance came out of the dark. We couldn't see him. And said he was my father and, you know, talked about my mother and stuff. But it was things that you could find if you really did some internet work and research and, you know, and spend some money. So, you know, my jury was out on that episode. I don't think my dad has communicated with us at all. I'm also told, Kelly and Michael, that even if they come back under reincarnation, which, you know, you two think the jury's still out on that, but even if they come back in reincarnation, there's another facet of the soul that still stays where it's supposed to be. Have you heard that?
I really haven't done much research on reincarnation to know, to tell you the truth. I would like to add something to what you said about your dad. You know, first of all, you have to call into question anybody that's doing this for money or has anything, any financial gain, because then you have to call into question what their motives are. But, you know, we were at a location last summer. My husband had lost his father the spring before. And we had something come across on the spirit box that was trying to say that it was his father, and it was not.
And it was not.
It was not. It was something trying to pretend to be his father, which obviously probably did not have good intentions.
No.
So I would caution everyone just to be extremely careful when you're trying to call back maybe the spirits of those that you really want to speak to, that you really want to say goodbye or whatever. It can be fraught with a little danger.
Yeah, and I want to say I'm sorry for the gentleman's loss and your loss, Mr. Norrie. We'll certainly keep both in our prayers. I think we have to be careful that we don't hold them here.
Yes, I agree.
And I worry about that. And I believe, and this is a personal belief, that God's grace will decide how long these spirits come and visit you and stay with you. If it's for your benefit, you know, your father might be with you, you know, indefinitely. But, you know, if it's not for your benefit, then we have to just be careful that we don't hold them here.
And we've seen people who have held spirits here, and I think the spirits are here because of the living, not because they necessarily want to be.
Do we have the ability to hold them here, or are they doing it to themselves?
I think we have the ability. It's the strength of emotion. I think a lot of people watch these shows on television and kind of miss that these entities are able to affect our emotions, sometimes very strongly. And I believe the strength of our emotions can also keep the spirits here.
Did you ever doubt that the other side existed?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, we've just seen and heard and experienced far too much now to ever have that doubt.
How about you, Michael?
My faith right from the beginning, you know, taught me that there was always another side. I think just the paranormal has kind of confirmed that for me.
I mean, I've always wondered, I mean, there was a moment that I doubted whether it was real or not, whether it existed, when a friend of mine died in a motorcycle accident. You know, you look at the body and you go, gosh, this is it. This is it.
Oh, yeah.
And it's a cold, stark, very uncomfortable feeling. I don't know why, but it is. And that thought alone, those feelings alone, help convince me that the other side does exist. Because I don't want to have to feel that way.
Exactly. And I think it's uncomfortable because it makes you think about your own mortality.
Which I'm not scared about. Are you?
There was a day when I probably would have said yes, but I'm older and wiser now, and I have a very strong faith. So other than the fact that I would miss my family, no, I'm not.
I haven't accomplished what I want to accomplish. You know, nobody wants to check out too early.
Of course.
But, you know, it's the facet of living. We're
exactly.
All going to go. Everybody listening to this program right now, I don't want to be morbid here, but everybody listening, you,
mm-hmm.
at one time, you're not going to be around anymore.
Exactly.
You're going to be gone.
Sure, mm-hmm. And that's what makes the paranormal so fascinating to everybody.
So remember this. Remember my night, this voice, when you're lying in bed ready to leave. Remember what I said, but you move on. And I wonder if the journey is exciting. Michael?
Oh, I think it definitely is. I mean, just our journey in the paranormal has brought us closer together as husband and wife, and we've learned so many heartfelt stories. And there's so many people we never met that really and truly we did just by stopping by their gravesite and seeing what people left behind are the words written on there.
All right. Well, we're going to come back and take final phone calls with both of you on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back to Coast, Kelly Lee, Michael Broski with us, and let's go right back to the phones. The hour's ticking. Oh, by the way, Kelly, let me ask you about your YouTube channel. What are some of the things you put on it?
Oh, we've got videos on there from our very first amazing video that we caught in Charleston of a full-bodied apparition with our brand-new full-spectrum camera. We've got some funny stuff on there. We've got all kinds of our adventures over the years.
All right, let's go to Jeff in Allentown, Pennsylvania. Hello, Jeffrey. Welcome to the show.
How you doing there, George? My question, I have two questions, actually.
All right.
The first one would be, have you ever experienced any animal ghosts or spirits while you're going about the cemeteries?
Actually, we have animal spirits in our house.
Oh, yeah?
So they're
like
there.
A dog or a cat?
I had several ferrets pass away from cancer over a relatively short period of time, and it didn't take very long before my husband was seeing and feeling them in the house, and we've heard them in here as well.
That's a good sign, because my dog had passed away last year, and I'm hoping she's in the other life. My second question is that you had mentioned previously that some spirits had followed you home from the small cemetery, and I'm sure the listeners want to hear the rest of that.
Well, it was a very uncomfortable experience. You know, we got home. It was a beautiful sunny day, and our garage door on our brand new house wouldn't open. And then once we got it opening, it was opening and closing by itself. We got into the house. The microwave was turning on. by itself. We went to dinner at a local restaurant here, and the light, just the light over our booth went off for no reason, and they couldn't get it to turn back on. We came home, and one of our dogs, who's an old English sheepdog, absolutely positively refused to come near me. I had awful nightmares that night to the point where I just absolutely was up and down all night long. And that was just about the end of our paranormal adventures right there.
Michael, when you two do your paranormal investigating, how long do you stay at a certain site?
It depends on the size of the cemetery. If we go to a private investigation, of course, we have to worry about the time the people were going there and the intrusion into their home. A very large cemetery, it's not uncommon to spend an hour, 2 hours there walking around.
Well, that's a long time.
Or more. We've been there longer.
Long time indeed. Let's go to Ohio. Susan's turn on Coast to Coast. Hi, Susan.
Hi. I know that you said you usually don't allow people to come with you on your investigations, but have you ever considered taking a medium with you, or how do you feel about them?
We've been a couple places with, we were lucky enough to have a medium with us at the Old City Jail in Charleston, and she brought out spirits. I don't think we would have had the experiences that we did if we had not had her with us. It was pretty amazing, actually.
And of all the people you've met, who would you say may be the most gifted dealing with the paranormal world?
As far as medium?
Mm-hmm.
Probably the lady down in Charleston. She's pretty amazing. She knows them by name, and they react so well with her. It's just unbelievable. I really believe in my heart and soul that had we been there with anyone else, the things that we saw, the experiences that we had wouldn't have occurred.
It's truly remarkable how this, you know, occurs. Now, do you think it's more spiritual or scientific, the other side?
Well, you know, what we consider science now was probably considered magic 100 years ago. So that's a tough question. I mean, right now it's not really mainstream science, but I look to the day when eventually at least some of it probably will be. They've already, you know, done studies about souls leaving bodies and things like that. So, I mean, I think eventually that science is going to prove at least some of this to be real.
Danny in Price, Utah. Hello, Danny. Go ahead.
Hello, how are you?
Good, Danny. Thank you.
Hey, can you hear us all right? We have our radio on. Want to make sure that you can hear us. You're on speakerphone, so.
You know, we can hear you.
Oh, awesome, George. Hey, longtime listener, actually a few years, a couple of young bloods here. My friend Cody wants to say hello, too.
George, how you doing, buddy?
Good, Cody, my man. How are you?
Great. Just listening.
Well, super. How about a question for the two? You got one?
A question. I'm not sure where I'm going with this one, honestly, but so I'm not a believer in the supernatural realm. My mother loves the show Supernatural, and the first season is pretty entertaining, but, you know.
But you don't believe in the ghostly end of it, do you?
It's a far-fetched kind of theory for me, you know?
All right, well, let's get their take. Michael, first of all, you. What do you say to somebody who doesn't believe?
I try to maintain a healthy dose of skepticism, and I was pretty skeptical when I got involved in this. It seems like we meet a lot of people, and they always start off by saying, I don't believe in ghosts, but then we always get but there was this one time. A lot of the skeptics, you know, we meet, they want to maintain that they're skeptics. We have a local writer here who says he's a skeptic, but yet he has these stories he tells us where obviously he believes something is going on there. I'd say wait. When you have that personal experience, it'll hit you like a lightning bolt. And I've known more than one person that was a skeptic that turned into a believer.
Kelly, how about you? What do you say to a skeptic?
Well, my usual answer is, well, if you're a skeptic, then you need to come to the Old City Jail in Charleston, South Carolina with us, because I guarantee you I can change your mind.
Thank you, Danny. Appreciate that. I would guess one night with real paranormal things happening will convince somebody.
If it doesn't, then I don't know what else you could possibly do. There are some people that just aren't going to believe no matter what evidence is presented to them.
Skype is open at George97313. Steve is in Denver, first-time caller. Hey, Stephen, welcome to the show.
Thank you for taking my call. The gentleman three callers ago kind of had my question, but I'll ask it anyway. I'm 61. I've seen a ghost three times in my life, and one was at Gettysburg. I was in front of a statue of General Bucktails. And this basset hound comes walking out. I'm looking around to see who owns him, and no one was around, and the basset hound starts walking away, and I see 90% of him, 80%. Anyway, after about 7 seconds, he's down to 10%, and he just totally disappears. So if animals can be ghosts, I know that you attribute some type of human emotion to human ghosts. What do you attribute to animal ghosts?
That's an excellent question, and I think it still has to do with emotions. I mean, if you have dogs, I mean, we have dogs. We recently lost one of our dogs. And, you know, these dogs feel emotions, too. They're creatures of habit. They're used to being with certain people in certain places and doing certain things. And I think it's the same thing with people. I mean, we're used to having our routine, and I think that routine sometimes sticks with us even after we go. Does that make sense?
People witness like little prints on their bed sometimes. They see that. What is that?
Probably a kitty cat, a ghost kitty cat.
A ghost kitty cat. So, I mean, how can they be able to physically affect something like the bed?
I don't understand yet. I mean, we've run into a ghost cat in St. Augustine at the Haunted Inn that we're going to. There's a woman there, a ghost woman, that has a ghost cat, and that ghost cat's just as real as a real cat, because it'll knock stuff off our dresser at 3 o'clock in the morning, just the same way a regular cat does. So I don't know. We haven't really determined that, and I think that's what a lot of paranormal investigators are trying to determine, why these things are able to affect the material world.
Let's go to Jim in Green Valley, Missouri. Hi, Jim. Go ahead.
Hi, George. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I had a question for Kelly.
Okay.
My mother passed away in 2006.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, thanks. And anyway, she was out of state, and when I returned home to Missouri, I had her prayer card that we had made up for her funeral. It's a Bible marker. And it was in my front shirt pocket the whole way home. And when I got home, carried up my luggage upstairs to the bedroom, and that thing had been rubbing my neck sore, so I took it out of my pocket and I laid it on our little bedroom TV. And there was no one else in the house yet. Everybody else was still out unpacking the car. And just as I sat on the bed, that prayer card jumped 6 feet off the television onto my bed. And just out of the blue, and it scared the heck out of me. And the hair stood up on my neck and my arms, and I was like kind of freaked out, and I just didn't know what to think of it. And I never thought about it much after that. And here 10 years later, one of my son's friends spent the night over here, and he was awoke in the same area of the house, just on the other side of the hallway from where the prayer marker issue happened. And he was awoke by a woman in a white cotton dress with black hair. Well, that sounds like my mother. She always wore white cotton dresses. She grew up in the South.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, long story short, he had never seen my mother before. And I had taken down all her pictures because I was in the process of having enlargements made and was going to change out all the pictures. So he had never seen a picture of her even before. But he described her perfectly. And he was very shaken. But this is like 10 years later. Can that happen? Can a ghost wait and then appear to someone else that's not even a family member in the same part of the house?
Absolutely. as I said before, the time reference for these spirits, we believe, is completely different than what our frame of reference is. Plus, you know, what they see and experience could be completely different than what we're seeing and experiencing. So often when we're on investigations, we ask a question, and sometimes it might take them 20 minutes before we get a relevant answer. So...
thanks for sharing that story.
Amazing story, yes. And I firmly believe that's completely possible.
Let's take a couple more calls, and then the clock is going to get us. We go to Jeffrey City, is it? In Wyoming. Chuck's with us. Hi, Chuck. Go ahead.
Hi, George. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing. Thank you.
I haven't talked to you, and I've called you several years ago. But my story is I've had several experiences with ghosts and things like that. But the main one that is probably the most important is shortly after my mother passed several years ago, both me and one of my sisters had dreams at night, and she came to us with the exact same dream, each one of us, and told us that everything was fine, she was okay, and that she wasn't coming again unless she had to, because it was very, very, very difficult and quite painful. And we all felt better for it. So that's about all I had to say. I had no question. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for sharing that with us, too. It takes a very special moment to share these kinds of stories, Michael, with people and Kelly, doesn't it?
It does. It's very personal.
We've got John in Ontario and Canada on the international line. Hi, John. Go ahead.
Oh, good. How are you?
Good.
That's good. And your guest, hello.
Hi.
You mentioned a ball lightning at one point, and then you were saying you didn't know if it would go through glass, George.
I said it would go through glass.
Oh, yeah, it will. Because I was at my parents' house. My dad's at one end of the couch. I'm at one. My mother is getting ready to cook supper. And it was dark. They owned the house. I owned the lot next door. And I looked over, and here's this ball of light, about the size of a soccer ball, just sitting there. But it was cloudy inside. There was something going on inside, but it was light around the outside. But it came shooting through the window when I got my dad to look. Couldn't get my mom's attention. But he looked at it. It hit the light, blew it out by the window. It hit my light. There was a light beside me. Blew it out. Went underneath the frying pan and started sparking and going nuts. So my mom dropped the frying pan, and it just started bouncing around on the stove by itself, and finally it stopped. But a quick ghost thing, well, or something like that. My mother died, and years and years ago, she died in 88. She was 60.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd bought her a clock for Mother's Day, my brother and I, when we were just kids. And it was still there in the house, you know, when she died. My dad phoned up and said that mother died of cancer, and we were down there a lot. So he just said, your mother's died, and not much more. But I noticed later on that the clock had stopped. I tried putting new batteries in it again and again and again. She died at 11:58.
And the clock stopped at
11:58.
Uh-huh.
It would never run again.
That happens. Now, Uri Geller could probably get that clock ticking again. He's done that on the show before, but that's a great story too. Kelly and Michael, I want to thank you both for really coming on the program. And Kelly, I'm going to give you the last word. What do you tell people who truly believe this, but they're scared of it?
Well, I tell them the same thing that my husband told y'all earlier. We're more afraid of the living than the dead. We've never been harmed by anything that we've come in contact with. And if they're frightened, then they need to call Phasma Paranormal to come figure out what they're frightened of.
You got it. All right, Kelly, thank you. Michael, thank you as
thank
well.
Thank you
so much for
having us. Appreciate it.
Okay, good luck with you and your ghost investigating. I am coming back in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM as we kick off our Friday the 13th open line. So get ready. just about anything goes. People are superstitious about Friday the 13th, or you're going to hear from the guy from Pittsburgh about that too next.